ויחן שם יסבר רגד הר אוהב כולנו כולנו
Shalom Aleichem, it's a tremendous chus to be part of this Vayichan program. Mirtz Hashem, we shall be makabel Torah this Shavuos wonderfully, and Mirtz Hashem have programs like this in the future, face-to-face, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the world allow for us to move in that direction. I wanted to share with you a question that bothers me very, very much. If you think about it, Moshe and Aaron are different people with different qualities. Chazal point out that Aaron is Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, Ohev Sabrias, Makarv Lo Torah, Aaron is a band of people, a man of shalom, a man who inspires people. And from Moshe, he's one of Ma'od Mikol Adam. You get the impression that Aaron excels in Ben Adam L'Chavero, connects to people. And Moshe's strength is different. His koach is more in humility. He can sit with HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chavrusa. And you wonder if you had to choose which one should be leading the people and which one should be sitting in the Mishkan, in the Beis HaMikdash, interacting with the Rabbona Shalom in a spiritual level, l'chora, it'd be backwards. One could have imagined Moshe Rabbeinu sitting in the Mishkan, sitting in the Beis HaMikdash, bringing karbanos, makriv to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a deep, intimate connection that he has, and using his strengths for l'chora, that avoda, and Aaron perhaps leading the people, inspiring the people, working with the people. After all, he seems to have impeccable, remarkable people skills. And one may wonder, like, did the Rabbona Shalom get it wrong? So the answer is obviously not. And therefore, what was the plan? Can we understand why Aaron is selected as the Kohen Gadol and Moshe to be in charge of the people? Now, the truth is, if you wanted to just take a small little peek as to what life would look like if Aaron was in charge of the people and Moshe was connected deeply with the Rabbona Shalom, you have to go no further than the Chet HaEgel. In other words, it was catastrophic, colossal failure. And you may wonder why. It seemed so wonderful a moment ago. Doesn't it make sense to put Aaron in a place that's appropriate for his skills and Moshe for his? Why is this failure so great? And I think the answer really lies into a uncovering and unpacking of the story of the Chet HaEgel. We're going to ask a couple major questions, which I think will give us a little bit of a new perspective on the Chet HaEgel story, develop a classic perspective, and hopefully that'll be able to answer these questions. Probably one of the most overlooked elements of the story is why Klal Yisrael choose an Egel. Why is it specifically an Egel, a cow, and particularly a calf? Why not a real cow? Why an idol cow, a golden cow? What are they trying to accomplish? In other words, if you want to put yourself in their mindset, they could have made anything. They just came from Mitzrayim where they worshipped the sheep. That's not what they do. You know, and if Moshe is gone, they're looking for a new middleman, as many of the Mefarshim point out. Okay, so maybe have Aaron be the right leader. In other words, choose a person. Why are you choosing an inanimate object, an angel, specifically a cow, something bovine, and why specifically a calf? Additionally, another strong, strange element of this story occurs at the end, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe comes down, breaks the egel, and tells the people, here's what I want you to do. Here's what they do with the egel. What happens to the egel? Listen to this. Perakhav Lamed Beis Pasakaf. Vayikach es egel asher asu, vayisrof be'esh, they burn the egel. Vayitchan ad asher dak, and they grind it up. They mince it until it's very fine, to like tiny little small pieces. Vayizer al pnei hamayim, they spread this, you know, they throw it all over, sprinkle it over the water. Vayashk et bnei Yisrael, and bnei Yisrael drink that water. What an odd response. What is that message? Have a little bit of egel in you? In other words, we're all supposed to drink a little bit of egel water. What do you accomplish by doing that? What an odd, peculiar thing to do. Now, the truth is, there's a lot of other questions, but I think those should give us a lot of insight as to what really is going on with the egel. Now, the standard classical wisdom is spot on. Klal Yisrael, or why is Aaron involved? And the standard answer is really spelt by the Medrash, but really echoed by Rashi and the Ramban, the Bukhor Shor, the Chizkuni, the Orchai, many of the Mefarshim, is that he's stalling. Machar will make this big party. Let's wait till Moshe comes down. He's optimistic Moshe will come down from Har Sinai. Additionally, he has no interest in doing the Avodah Zarah. All he's interested in redirecting them. Let's make sure that this doesn't replace HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's a middleman. replace Moshe. Chag, Hashem Machar, it should be for Hashem. And Machar. You see Aaron trying his best to stall and to redirect everything in the right direction. And in a certain sense, Aaron is seen as the less strict parent. Aaron is kind and sensitive. Again, that's where it comes into, Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, Ohev Ben Makarv LaTorah, they mourn for him longer. Even the sin with Miriam, at the Lashon Hara, he doesn't speak Lashon Hara, but he doesn't put his foot down strong enough. Aaron's a soft parent who works with the people. Again, he does nothing wrong ideologically. It's strategically, the Mefarshim point out. He should have put his foot down. Aaron, again, is a less strict parent. And that may be why Bnei Yisrael go to him once they choose an ego. Once, and we'll have to get back to why. Once they are no longer looking for a person to replace Moshe. So it's great to have Aaron on board. Who's going to quash this rebellion if Aaron's supportive? Moshe Rabbeinu, by contrast, has an entirely different personality. Moshe Rabbeinu represents MS, represents truth, represents something entirely different. Moshe represents by his reaction. In contrast to joining the people, Moshe throws the luchos. They both hear of the same event, Aaron and Moshe. Aaron tries to navigate from within. Moshe puts his foot down. And that may be exactly what the Medrash has in mind. In Shmos Rabbah, where it says, Chesed ve'emes nifgashu, Tzedek v'shalom nishaku, Chesed ze Aaron ve'emes ze Moshe. Aaron is about Chesed, while Moshe is about Emes. And perhaps this particular event separates the two when synthesis and integration is needed. When Emes is up in Har Sinai, lofty and disconnected from Klal Yisrael, and instead it's all about Chesed and kindness and flexibility, that's what opens up the floodgate. That's what allows for this particular sin. Because Bnei Yisrael are not looking to replace Moshe, they're looking to replace Moshe. That's not so bad, and Aaron joins in. Matter of fact, they're afraid when Moshe leaves, there's utter confusion. When Moshe leaves, there's bedlam that breaks out. They actually are not looking to replace Hashem. Listen carefully to the pasuk. What they say is remarkable. They say, Moshe Ha'ish, we don't know what happened to him. What happened to Moshe Ha'ish? Why Dafka? Because Moshe is a person, and a person can get lost. Let's replace Moshe with an idol, something that guarantees permanence. It's eternal. They're looking for something eternal, and that's where they choose an idol. Why specifically a cow? Why specifically a calf? Again, when Moshe is gone, Moshe who represents MS. When he's gone, there's instability. There's imbalance and instability. Imbalance because there's no MS. And instability because you know when Moshe's around, things can't get too far out of control. You know things are grounded when Moshe's around. When Moshe's no longer around, that's when things become confusing. And, you know, that's when they need something long-term and eternal. We cannot put all of our stake in just a man. We need an idol, and particularly a cow. Why? A cow represents sustenance. A cow represents milk, which is what gives sustenance to people. Their search for sustenance leads them to particularly a cow, but more than a cow, a calf, because a calf does not serve as an independent source of sustenance. It still requires milk from its mother. A calf captures exactly where Bnei Yisrael are. They want to have sustenance from this calf, but they realize, from the Avodah Zarah, but they realize that that itself needs HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're looking for a different middleman to replace Moshe. And they choose specifically an idol because it's long-term permanence. A cow because it reflects them. They can give to them sustenance. It can take care of them. And simultaneously, a cow may represent replacing Ribbono Shel Olam. They're looking to replace Moshe. So a calf, which still needs its mother, still needs to nurse from its mother, that's why they choose particularly this animal. The message to Bnei Yisrael, or Bnei Yisrael's ideology, and each person, each group has a different. Moshe is, let me go connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam, which is wonderful for him, but enables a situation for unbalance and instability. Aaron's about chesed, sensitivity, and trying to work to go in the right direction, but sometimes you got to put your foot down. Klal Yisrael are at loss for direction. They're confused and have no idea where to go. They're just looking for anything to replace Moshe. And when Moshe And Aaron, when Chesed and Emes are not balanced, when there's no synthesis, when there's no integration, when they're not working together, that's where the trouble starts. And that answers really all of our questions. Why does Moshe get his role and Aaron his? Because he wants synthesis and balance, a healthy combination of the different midos. What's their plan in Nego? We answer that. That's to replace Moshe and specifically the Nego. We pointed out, what did Klal Yisrael want? Klal Yisrael want clarity. Now it's fascinating. The response is, again, that they should drink the ego. Why is that? What's the idea there? And I think the message may be very subtle but important. It's legitimate to be confused when Moshe is gone. It's legitimate to have questions and wonder when there's a sense of instability. What's illegitimate, what's wrong, is when it manifests itself in the Avodah Zarah. It's okay to ask questions. You can have a little doubt inside. It's okay to be confused during confusing situations. What's not okay is the Avodah Zarah, and therefore the symbolic message of mincing and destroying this Egel into tiny little pieces and having him drink it is, if you have a small question on the inside, it's okay. You can even ask it. But this reaction, this response is horrific. We don't respond with the Avodah Zarah. And perhaps that answers a lot, but I want to take it one step further. I want to share a little bit more insight to this story because I think there's a lot more to be said. Fascinatingly, this particular response and the entire story at large sounds awfully similar to another story out there, which is the story of the Sota. The Sota is shockingly parallel to our particular episode. Let me share with you the similarities before we try to put some context to it and try to figure out why that's the case. For starters, both the Sota and Bnei Yisrael unfaithfully both the Sota and Bnei Yisrael act extremely unfaithfully, leading to a situation where deep uncertainty is needed. The Sota is alone with another man, secluded after she was specifically requested not to be, yet it's unclear whether the act took place. Similarly, Bnei Yisrael have erected this ego, and again, it's unclear how bad it is because they're not looking to replace God. There's some level of confusion, but they are lost and unfaithful. Bnei Yisrael drink water as the Sota drinks water. The Sota drinks water with something destroyed on it. Bnei Yisrael drink water with something destroyed in it. For the Sota, it's Hashem's name. For Bnei Yisrael, it's the remembrance of the ego. But that's remarkable. How often do you have that in Tanakh, where you have people drinking water with some type of destruction, placed into it? Only here. Both unfaithful groups are tested. The Sota is examined by this particular water, what really was going on. And Bnei Yisrael are tested as well, where Moshe then says, Mila Shem Eli. And that's the ultimate test. No one gets punished for the Chet Ha'egel. They get punished for not doing Mila, for not coming to God with Mila Shem Eli. Aaron doesn't get punished. Bnei Yisrael don't get punished. There's confusion. It's understandable. It's when Moshe comes down and does a Bedika, there's a test now. And that's parallel to the test of the Sota. Hashem acts as a peacemaker between the Sota and her husband, trying to erase himself, willing to erase his own name for the sake of Shalom. Moshe Rabbeinu as well is interested in making peace between Klal Yisrael and the Rabbono Shalom. And he also attempts being erased. He says, Im tisach schat aschem ve'imayin mecheni na mesifracha. If you're not going to forgive Klal Yisrael, mecheni na mesifracha, erase me from your book. Shocking. The similarities are just so strong. More than that, what's the punishment if you are guilty? The answer is death. That's what happens to the people who are not Mila Shem Eli. 3,000 of them are killed. And that's what happens to the Sota if she was in fact unfaithful. This parallel is an old parallel. It's not new. It's really commented by, noticed by, the first one to make this point is the Gemara in Sota, Chazal Seidan Daf in Masechet Yoma, Chazal Masechet Yoma on Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. There the Gemara says, Vayishkat Bnei Yisrael, lo niskavein ela labot kam kisotos. Kisotos. This is designed to parallel the Sota. And the million-dollar question is going to become why. Why would the Torah and Chazal reinforce this theory? It's not accidental. That's what the Medrash points out. It's not accidental. What's pshat? Why would there be this parallel? Before I share with you my insight, my suggestion, let me share with you something else. There's a tremendous contrast as well. Not only are they parallel, but they're like opposites. Not just different, but the exact opposites. Let me share with you what I'm talking about. Well, for the Sota, it's Hashem's name who's destroyed. In our story, it's Avodah Zarah's name which is destroyed. Mamash, the opposite. Hashem serves as the peacemaker between the Sota and the Sota case, allowing his name to be erased. Moshe is serving as the role model, a man versus God, but more than that, God's name is erased for the Sota. Moshe attempts to have his name erased. He says, Mechini na mesifracha, and ultimately, that's not the plan, that's not what we do. Beyond that, the Sota's unfaithfulness takes place in the most private of areas. It's bedafka in a secluded place. How about the story of Klal Yisrael with the Chet HaEgel? Public, in a very open place, it's a public celebratory situation. A faithlessness, the exact opposite. More than that, the Sota is warned by her husband, don't do this. There's no real clear warning that's going on over here. Beyond that, the Sota's unclarity lies in her actions. Her motivations are bad. It's her actions who are not. Klal Yisrael is the opposite. Their actions are bad. It's just their motivation which requires a bedika. More than that. Unlike the waters which the Sota drinks, which are designed to investigate her previous acts, for Klal Yisrael, it's less about the previous acts and more, are you willing to throw yourself in the future? And the question now becomes, why make this comparison? What's the similarity all about? And the similarity may just be about drawing the parallel so you realize there's an unfaithfulness, but the opposites capture more than that. Let me say it this way. The similarities capture both that message, which is they're both unfaithful, they're both lack the sense of you can't trust them. And simultaneously, the parallels create a context where you can notice the opposites. What's the opposites? The opposites are, can this husband forgive his wife only if she didn't act? Can HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgive Klal Yisrael? Even if you acted, he can forgive. It's about your motivations. The Ribbono Shel Olam's love for us and care for us is much more about our motivations. The role of the Kohen is remarkable. He assists the Sota taking off her hair covering, which is what the Gemara, that's actually the Makor for why women have to cover their hair. But the Kohen helps the Sota remove her hair covering. The Kohen helps the Sota along. Why specifically the Kohen? He helps her drink the water. He helps her with her Shavua, she has to make. Why? It could be if Aaron's mistake was in the Chet HaEgel, the Kohen's Tikkun is in the Sota. The character trait of flexibility and working with people is used for the Kohen to reinstate trust between man and wife, not facilitate avodah zarah. Flexibility is a virtue in response to sin, not as a facilitator of it. And that perhaps may be what's going on with this parallel to the Sota. But I want to share with you one more remarkable parallel. And then hopefully just a little bit of hashkafa, the conclusion will stop. The Sefer Malachim, in Malachim Aleph, in like Parakeet Aleph, there's this big, huge schism where Yeravam ben Nevat and Shlomo's son, Mechavim ben Shlomo, split in half, and they make Malchus Yisrael and Malchus Yehuda. It's remarkable what Yeravam does. What does Yeravam do when he starts? He moves up north, and he's afraid that the people are going to kill him, and they'll go back to Yerushalayim, bring Karbanos, they'll muster up loyalty towards Malchus Yehuda, and they're going to kill him and replace the Beit. So he decides what he's going to do is he's going to make these two golden calves, remarkably shockable, also going to parallel our story. And he makes these two golden calves designed for Avodah Zarah, and this way the Jews won't go down to the Beis HaMikdash and reunite with their brethren Yehuda, rekindle that sense of loyalty, and he's protecting himself. But if you look, there's a remarkable amount of parallels between this story in Sefer Malachim and our story of the Chet HaEgel and Sefer Shmos. Let me list them for you as well. Most clearly, Yeravam creates golden calves designed for Avodah Zarah. You can't get any more similar than that. Yeravam's construction of these calves is motivated by death of a leader. He's afraid he's going to be killed. And therefore, as a replacement for something, Klal Yisrael was afraid of Moshe being killed. And therefore, as a replacement of something, replacement of the Beis HaMikdash, opposed to replacement for Moshe, but as a replacement for something, you have these golden calves. That's awfully similar. In both situations, Yeravam's situation and us, it's right after Yitzias Mitzrayim. Our story is right when Klal Yisrael got out of Mitzrayim. Yeravam was in Mitzrayim until this particular episode. Remarkable. Listen to this Lashon. Vayas Yeravam Chag. It sounds a lot like Chag Lashem Machar. Yeravam has a son named Nadav. So similar to Aaron, who has a son named Navdav. Both stories deal with a tension and situation amongst leadership, where Moshe and Aaron are not working together because Moshe is up in Har Sinai and Aaron's working with the people. Not the same, but in a certain sense, similar to Yeravam and Rechavam, who are also not working together. It's a story of two leaders not working together, and the Chet HaEgel is designed to wedge that gap further. what's the point of that? But before I share with you the point, let me share with you the opposites, because they're remarkable as well. Whereas Yeravim, who constructs two golden calves, Klai Yisrael and Shmos, only one. Yeravim is part of a, I'm sorry, although both calves are part of a coup and rebellious, one is designed to replace the leader as a middleman, replace Moshe, one is designed to replace the Beis HaMikdash, a building. The Cheder Egel story is a small glitch, and we rebound from it pretty quickly. Not the story of Yeravim, that's a schism which creates a gap and split in Klal Yisrael for hundreds of years. Whereas Aaron is the leader involved, he's brought in by the people. The people cause him to help. Yeravim is not brought in by the people, he causes the people. The exact opposite to rebel. Although Bnei Yisrael and Shmos have good intentions when they build this ego, they act wrong. Yeravim doesn't have good intentions at all. Again, the opposite. Where Aaron selflessly joins the masses to minimize fighting and trouble, Yeravim does the opposite. He's maximizing it. Whereas Bnei Yisrael are afraid that Moshe has already died, the people worrying about the leader, about a death that already occurred, Yeravim is himself worrying about himself, not the people, and he's worried about him dying in the future. There's a lot more to be said over here. Perhaps the strongest similarity is, and we'll get back to the opposite in a second, is Ela, I skipped this one, I apologize, let me go back, is the Pasuk says, Hine Elokecha Yisrael Asher Aluchem Yeretz Mitzrayim. That's what it says in Sefer Malachim. Identical to Ela Elokecha Yisrael Asher Aluchem Yeretz Mitzrayim. What is the goal of these parallels? What's the goal of the opposites? What is the Navi's message? How does the Navi use Sefer Shmos' story to make its point? And the answer is, the Cheder Egel in Sefer Shmos was an innocent mistake when there was a struggle in leadership. In Sefer Malachim, it's the exact opposite. It's the opposite story. We're intending to cause divide in leadership. One story is Aaron is trying his best to do what's right, and it's the wrong strategy. Here's the story of Yeravim, who's evil and wicked, looking to do the wrong thing. And the stories are the opposites. What's the point? The point of the Chet Ha'egel story is that when Moshe and Aaron, and when people are not using their role properly, when everyone's not working in their own role, creating a sense of balance, there becomes unbalance and unrest. When there's no MS and all there is Chesed, you run into the Chet Ha'egel. What Shlemus is about, and what people getting together is about, and frankly, Achdus, and that's a lot what this conference and this entire day and program is about, is that not everyone has the same role. Aaron can be different from Moshe, and Moshe can be different from Aaron. And Klal Yisrael sometimes needs Moshe's MS, and sometimes needs Aaron's Chesed. The goal is that we should continue learning from each other and not trying to exclusively have one midah over the other. That's the message of the Cheder Egel. That's where the failure comes from. Klal Yisrael is at rest because there's an unbalance and unrest. The religious message, I believe, of that story, which is a prerequisite for a proper, successful Kabbalah Satorah, opposed to the one where everything's split, the correct one, the Lucho Shnios, are done with a sense of Shlemus and together. Achdus is needed, and the way we do so is when we respect each other's strengths and work together to create a better unit, as opposed to each person using their strengths not as a team. I want you to have a beautiful mashal, and I'll conclude with this. If everyone's playing different music, it sounds like noise. Unless they're playing together, it sounds like symphony. We should all be zochet to continue days like this, playing together a symphony in Amir Tzashem. The Gula Shleim will be here, Bekarv B'Yameinu. Good Yontif, everyone. Yashar Koach. I enjoy everyone. I wish Chodesh Tov. Thank you very much for taking part of this wonderful program.